Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Wilson is joined by Dr. Cleo Rooney for a conversation about immunotherapies for cancer. Dr. Rooney is professor of pediatrics, pathology, and immunology at Baylor College of Medicine. Here's Lynn Wilson.
Let's start off by having you tell our listeners a little bit about what it is that you do at Baylor.
Well, I'm an immunologist by training, and I'm interested in how T lymphocytes, which are white blood cells, recognize abnormal cells like virus-infected cells and tumor cells and kill them. And I got interested in this field when I was working at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and patients who were receiving bone marrow transplant were developing lymphomas that were caused by the Epstein-Barr virus. And the reason that they develop these lymphomas is because after transplant, they're very immunosuppressed and they don't really have very many T cells, and it takes the T cells a long time to recover after the transplant. And because T cells are responsible for controlling virus infections, that's why these tumors developed. And during my postdoctoral studies in England, I had learned how to make EBV-specific cytotoxic T cells, and these are lymphocytes that are able to recognize a cell that's infected with EBV, like these lymphoma cells, and kill it. And so I started to make T cells from the blood of the bone marrow donors, and we started to infuse them into the patients who developed lymphoma. And what we found, to our surprise, was that very small numbers of T cells after infusion would start to proliferate. That means to divide. So if you put in 1 million cells, you might end up with 10 million or 100 million or 1,000 million cells in a very short amount of time. And those T cells were able to eliminate the lymphomas that these patients had. And they were also able to prevent lymphomas from developing in patients who were at very high risk because they had large amounts of virus in their peripheral blood. And this was very exciting research, and at that time it was quite new. And so we just got interested in furthering this type of research to be able to control patients who are getting infections with other types of viruses and patients who are developing other types of cancer. And the reason that the T cell therapy is very interesting is because T cells are very specific for a virus-infected cell. So if you have one virus-infected cell among a lot of normal cells, it will kill the virus-infected cell and it won't hurt the normal cell. So patients who receive T-cell therapies don't get sick. They don't lose their hair. They don't feel nauseous. They don't have fevers, or very rarely. And there's no long-term negative consequences like one sees with standard therapies for tumors. And so it's a very gentle therapy and very tolerable for the patients.
So this problem for a patient who would have developed a lymphoma in the case that you described, was this a common problem for patients undergoing a transplant?
So at that time, it was a cause of death in about probably 10% of patients who were receiving a bone marrow transplant from an unrelated donor. And the main problem that those patients have is a disease called graft versus host disease, where you put in, and so basically these patients are patients who've got some kind of, usually a hematological malignancy. And so the patients are treated with chemotherapy and they receive total body irradiation to kill all the tumor cells that they have. And then they get bone marrow from a healthy donor who's HLA matched with them to reconstitute their immune system. But this reconstitution takes a long time. And what the doctors do is remove the T cells so the T cells don't recognize the patient as foreign and start to attack their normal lymphocytes. But because they've removed the T cells, then the patients are susceptible to all sorts of virus infections. And EBV is one of the most problematic ones because it can cause lymphoma and can kill the patients. And at that time, there were no antiviral drugs that you could use to cure the patients. And so most of the patients died.
I see. And you mentioned EBV is the most common. What are some of the other ones that are concerning?
So after bone marrow transplant, viruses that we all carry around in us, so almost all of us are infected with EBV, with cytomegalovirus, varicella zoster virus, adenovirus, a lot of common viruses that we carry with us or that we're frequently exposed to. We might have a short illness and then get better. Those types of viruses can be lethal for a patient who doesn't have enough T cells to control it. And so one of the ways that we're extending our T cell therapies is to identify T cells that can protect against other types of viruses. And we're interested in particularly, in addition to EBV, cytomegalovirus and adenoviruses. And we're beginning to do perform studies with a virus called BK virus, which is also which causes kidney problems, and also human herpes virus type 6 that also is a problem in those patients.
Can you tell us a little bit more, especially for our listeners who don't have any scientific background or aren't too knowledgeable about medicine or biology, what exactly are T cells? And what separates them from some of the other fighting cells that we have, such as B cells, for example? What are the differences?
So we have a lot of fighting cells in our blood, and we have the red cells and the white cells. And the white cells are really the fighting cells. And those cells patrol the body looking for trouble and looking for abnormal cells. And the T cells are really the troops, the effector cells, and they go and recognize abnormal cells and kill them. B cells also recognize abnormal proteins, and B cells secrete antibodies. So the antibodies are able to bind to bacteria and help to eliminate bacteria. They can also bind to free viruses and cause those to be killed. But the problem is when a virus gets into a cell and when it's inside the cell, then it can become invisible to B cells, and the antibodies can't recognize an infected cell from the outside. But the way a T cell can recognize a cell is that all cells have molecules on them called major histocompatibility molecules. So that it's a kind of molecule that carries fragments of proteins in the cell to the outside of the cell and displays them on the cell surface. And they display it in a way that antibodies can't see them, but T cells can see them. And T cells are really amazing cells because each T cell has a receptor that recognizes one of these fragments associated with one of the molecules that carries it to the cell surface. And they're estimated that the possible different combinations, possible different receptors are about 10 to the 16. That's
wow.
A huge number of different types of receptor. But within a single individual, probably the number of different T cells is about probably 2 million. So the T cells are capable of recognizing 2 million different small fragments. And many of the T cells never get used and they die. But if a T cell sees a fragment that it recognizes, then it starts to divide and proliferate. So it increases in numbers. And if it's specific for a pathogen like Epstein-Barr virus, then it will increase to very large numbers. So long as the virus is there, the T cell will increase in numbers so that they can eliminate the problem, the cause of the infection. And then after that, most of the T cells will die, but a small fraction of the T cells will remain. So they'll be present at higher numbers than they are before you ever were infected with the virus. And in those types of numbers, they're able to, if you get a second infection, to proliferate very quickly and prevent that infection taking off. And that's why if you've been infected with a virus once, then you're usually protected against it the next time. And it's also the way vaccines work. So what a vaccine does is increase the number of T cells specific for a certain antigen. And so that if you get infected with that virus that for the vaccine, then you've got enough T cells to control it and
so
stop you getting sick.
If someone got chickenpox, for example, when they were a child, typically is this the reason that they would probably never suffer from that again?
Yes, that's right. But chickenpox can actually reactivate later in life. And when people are stressed, it could be emotional stress, and it could be just age. As your immune system ages, it gets less potent. And chickenpox virus, which after you've had your primary infection, actually goes and hides in your neural tissues, and it can reactivate and come out and cause zoster or shingles, which is a very painful form of disease. And we're actually now trying to develop T cells specific for the chickenpox virus to protect patients who may develop it when they're older.
I see. So this activity of the T cells it sounds like it's not as if they're dormant and only get revved up when there is a super special infection, but it sounds like they're doing work in the background all of the time, 24 hours a day.
They are, and it's very interesting. So we've studied patients who've been vaccinated for smallpox. Nobody's vaccinated for smallpox anymore because it's been eliminated because of the vaccination. But I, for example, people of my age were vaccinated when we were small children 50 years ago. And if we can take my blood and reactivate T cells specific for the smallpox, for the vaccine virus, which is called vaccinia. And the T cells are still there, ready to be activated if, for example, I was exposed to the virus. So our T cells last for a very, very long time. Once they've been activated in the first place, then they can live for many, many, many years.
That's fascinating. Tell our listeners a little bit about why cellular immunotherapy is a good treatment option. And tell us about the potential toxicities.
So cell therapy is a good treatment option because it's so safe and because it's so specific and because T cells kill only the cell that's infected with the virus or only the tumor cell, and they don't kill normal cells. They're very good for the treatment of virus infections because we've been exposed to the virus infection, so we have this type of memory that I talked that lasts for a very long time. It's easy to grow those cells in culture and give them back to somebody who may be immunocompromised. So lack of toxicity and high specificity are the good parts, but of course there are the downsides, and it's much easier to target a virus infection or a virus-induced tumor because those proteins that are expressed by the virus are foreign to the immune system. But when you have a tumor that's not associated with the virus, so for example, melanoma, it's much more difficult to treat because there are no foreign antigens that you can, or proteins that the T cells can attack. So what investigators have to do is try to trick the immune response into thinking that some of the proteins are foreign, and that to trick the T cells into proliferating and attacking that protein. But of course, you have to select proteins that are exclusively expressed on the tumor cells. And when we started 20 years ago, people thought that there wouldn't really be any proteins that a T cell could recognize, because if it did, then it would kill a lot of normal cells. But people are beginning to identify more and more proteins that are expressed in non-viral tumor antigens that can be targeted and are not expressed in normal tissues for various reasons. And so there are some proteins that are normally expressed during fetal development and then they're shut down. But in tumors, because their regulation has gone slightly crazy, they re-express these fetal antigens. And those are expressed for some reason that we don't really understand in many tumors. And so we can target those antigens. And Steve Rosenberg at the NCI has been very successful in targeting melanoma with these tumor antigen-specific T cells that he can actually extricate from the tumor and then grow up in large numbers in tissue culture in the laboratory. And then he infuses them back into the patient. But they're only effective if he first removes all the lymphocytes, the circulating white cells in the patient, so that then the T cells, when they go into the patient, because there's an empty space, they start to divide because of this. It's called homeostatic expansion, where T cells fill up an empty space.
I see.
And so then he also requires the addition of growth factors, which are proteins that make T cells grow.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about immunotherapies for cancer with Dr. Cleo Rooney.
The American Cancer Society estimates that over 1,000 patients will be diagnosed with melanoma in Connecticut each year. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. Early detection is the key. When detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable, and new treatment options and surgical techniques are giving melanoma survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. The Specialized Programs of Research Excellence in Skin Cancer grant at Yale, also known as the SPORE grant, will help establish national guidelines on modifying behavior and on prevention, as well as identification of new drug targets. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined by my guest, Dr. Cleo Rooney, and we're discussing immunotherapies for cancer. Dr. Rooney, a question that probably some of our listeners are thinking about is you've given some excellent explanations of the T cell and how it works against viruses. And some listeners are probably wondering, you know, hey, a common cold, isn't that a virus? Why, if we have T cells and they're operational and I get a cold and it goes away, why do I get a cold again, you know, 6 months later or next year? Why does that happen?
So I think that's because there are very many different viruses that can cause colds, lots of different virus families, and within those families, lots of different strains. And so some viruses, like influenza, change their proteins so that they can escape from T cells. And that's why we have to have a new vaccine every year to try to protect us against influenza virus. And I think there are millions and millions of viruses, so I'm afraid that probably we're still going to continue to get colds every year, regardless of how many we've had previously.
And that sounds like pretty tricky business, though, trying to predict what viruses might be happening next year and trying to come up with vaccines and so on. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about some of the science about behind that?
So that's very interesting, because influenza virus is the main virus where we have a new vaccine every year, and where people have to try to go and predict what is a new influenza virus vaccine going to be. And the way they do that is to study bird populations, because influenza virus infects a number of different animals as well as humans, and it infects birds, and they don't really get sick, but the virus can replicate in them. So people will go and look for new bird viruses to see if they've tested, and they test them because they've got libraries of influenza viruses that have been around in the past. And if they find a new one that they find all over the world in lots of different places, and if humans have never been exposed to it, then the idea is that the humans, if they do get exposed to it, will not be immune, and therefore they'll start to they'll become infected, and then they'll infect other people, and then it'll start spread throughout the population. So it's slightly hit and miss. They may not always get the right influenza virus.
I see. What cancer are you primarily focused on in your work?
Well, I'm very interested in Epstein-Barr virus-associated cancers, and it causes this lymphoma that I discussed in bone marrow transplant recipients, but it also causes cancers in individuals who are not immunosuppressed. So just healthy people like you and me can develop lymphomas or nasopharyngeal carcinoma, and even these muscle cell cancers. And it's not really clear why we develop them, but the virus certainly plays a role in it, because we know that the virus can cause cancer, but it probably requires other factors that happen in the cell, changes that happen in the cell that also contribute to the tumor. And these tumors, these EBV-associated tumors, do express some viral antigens. So it's very strange to understand why they can grow in somebody who's been exposed to the virus and controls the virus, but it doesn't control the tumor cells. And what we have found is that we can detect in the circulation of a patient with a tumor, T cells that can recognize that tumor, but yet the tumor grows. And this is because all tumors grow only if they can avoid the immune response, because if they can't, they're obviously not going to grow, so we won't see them. And tumors have got very many, very clever ways to avoid the immune response. So they secrete proteins that shut off T cells, and they recruit other cell types that are also inhibitory to T cells. And one of the tumors that's associated with Epstein-Barr virus is called Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's not EBV is not in all of the Hodgkin tumors, but in about 30% of the cases, all the tumor cells express EBV antigens. But if you look at the bulk of a Hodgkin tumor, only 1 in 100 cells are actually tumor cells, and all the other cells are cells that the tumor has recruited or has attracted. And the way it does that is it secretes molecules that bring in cells that protect it. So it doesn't, it brings in these cells called T regulatory cells, which are inhibitory cells which protect us against autoimmunity. It brings in eosinophils, mast cells, all sorts of cells that really shouldn't be there, but work to downregulate T cells and prevent the tumor cell from being killed. And so what we're trying to do is understand the ways that the tumor cells can inhibit T cells and then generate T cells that can overcome this kind of inhibition.
And so if somebody was immunocompromised and they have EBV, for example, and develop a lymphoma, and therapeutically we eliminate the virus, do we need to treat the lymphoma as well? Or by elimination of the virus in that particular situation, could the lymphoma go away on its own if the viral stimulation is eliminated?
Well, okay, so that's a very good question. So what I have to explain is that when you get your first infection with EBV, it infects your B cells and epithelial cells, and you might not even notice that you've been infected, or you might have a sore throat, or you might get infectious mononucleosis. But after you've controlled the virus, it never goes away, and you carry that virus in your body for the rest of your life, in your B cells. And although the virus has got about 90 different proteins, when it's in your B cells, it can shut them all down. So the virus DNA is in the B cell, but it's not expressing any proteins. And in that form, it can't be recognized by T cells. But at the same time, it's not hurting you in any way. It's just there. And in most cases, most of us will carry the virus throughout for our whole lives without ever knowing it's there or having any problems with it. But sometimes a mistake can happen. There may be mutations in a cell that's infected with the virus, and it can grow as a tumor. And so you could eliminate that tumor cell, but you won't eliminate the EBV infection. So you'll still be infected with EBV, but you could have eliminated the tumor. And we don't really have a way to eliminate the virus from our body because our T cells can't recognize the virus-infected cell.
I see. So it's complicated.
And that's very typical of herpes viruses, that once they infect us, we might be sick for a short amount of time, but then we control the virus, but we never eliminate it. So it lives in our bodies for our whole life, usually without problems.
I see. How has the research in this field advanced over the last 5 years or so? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, in the last 5 years, we've come to realize that for T-cell therapy to be effective for a broader range of tumors outside of the bone marrow transplant setting, it's essential that the T-cells must proliferate or divide after you infuse them into a patient, because every T-cell that you infuse may have to kill thousands of tumor cells. So it's not enough for the T-cell just to kill the tumor cell or a few tumor cells and die. It's got to really proliferate and keep going for quite a long time until all the tumor cells are eliminated. And then hopefully it will reduce in its numbers, but it will still be there at elevated levels so that it can they can reactivate if the tumor would recur. But the problem is, how do we make sure that the T cells proliferate or grow after we infuse them into the patient? Because the tumor cells are trying to stop the T cells from growing. And so what investigators in a lot of different groups are trying to do is develop ways to make T cells grow better. And one of the ways is to genetically modify them. And they can be modified in very many different ways. But one of the most, popular ways to modify them is with a receptor. So a receptor is a molecule that sits in the membrane of the T cell, and it sticks out of the T cell on the outside and also on the inside. And on the outside, you can put a receptor that can bind to a tumor cell, and on the inside, then there are other molecules that tell the T cell to kill that tumor cell and also to proliferate. So we can make what's called a chimeric molecule, which has signals for the T cell not only to kill but also to proliferate. And those types of therapies are just starting to come into the clinic now. And recently, Carl June at the University of Pennsylvania has reported 3 complete remissions in patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia who've received T cells expressing one of these chimeric receptors on T cells. And so these are the types of ways that we're going forward. And I think we really have to make sure that the T cells proliferate. And another way is to combine T cells with vaccination so that you can, if you can present the tumor antigen in an immunogenic way away from the tumor site, then you might get T cell division and proliferation that's independent of the tumor, but those T cells that are proliferated can then go and kill the tumor. And you can continue to vaccinate and increase the numbers of T cells so that you've got large numbers that can hopefully eliminate the tumor, and then you can stop vaccinating. And that's something that we hope to evaluate in the near future.
Tell us what a tumor antigen is. What does that mean?
Well, a tumor antigen can be any molecule that allows a T cell or an antibody to recognize it and that it's not expressed on a normal cell. So it has to be something that's unique to the tumor. So it could be a foreign protein from a virus, or it could be one of these fetal antigens that I described, or it could be a mutated protein that's mutated in the tumor cell, so it doesn't have a normal sequence that our body, that our T cells would recognize as being healthy cells. And so anything that's abnormal can be called a tumor antigen. And mostly they're proteins, but they can also be glycolipids or they can be carbohydrates. So they can really be, the chemistry can be very different.
And how is it that my T cells, and this might be a complicated answer, but try to simplify it if possible. How is it that my T cells can figure out what's part of me and they don't get fired up about that? And how do they recognize something that might look sort of similar that is foreign to my body? I mean, I know it's incredibly complicated immunology, but how do they figure that out?
It's very complicated. So T cells essentially have to go to school. So you make new T cells in your bone marrow all the time, and they come out of your bone marrow and they go to the thymus. And in the thymus, they get educated about normal proteins. And normal proteins are expressed in the thymus, all sorts of different normal proteins are expressed, like, for example, skin proteins and muscle proteins are expressed in the thymus. And T cells that recognize them are killed in the thymus. So the only T cells that come out of the thymus are T cells that don't recognize our own antigens strongly. So what comes out are T cells with receptors that don't recognize what we call self, and they can only recognize a non-self. And so the non-self are things like virus antigens and abnormal proteins. And we're lucky with the fetal antigens that they are not, this process is called tolerization. So the T cells become tolerant to self, that T cells are not tolerized so much to these fetal antigens. Although it is true that the T cells specific for these fetal antigens are often not as strong as the T cells specific for the viral antigens. So there may be a degree of tolerance.
I see. Tell us a little bit about some of the research going on in your laboratory.
So in my laboratory, we're trying to develop new ways to generate T cells, to have simpler ways to generate T cells, because we're very interested in, now that we've developed therapies that are very successful, for example, virus-specific T cells after bone marrow transplantation and T cells specific for EBV-positive lymphomas, we want to try to make these T cells broadly available to all patients rather than the patients who come to our rather small studies. And so to do this, we're trying to make our T cell generation procedures more simple and shorter and safer. And so we're developing ways of growing T cells more quickly so that we can now, instead of taking about 3 months to generate T cells specific for viruses, we can now do it in about 10 days. And this means that a patient doesn't have to wait so long, because many patients who've got virus infections can't wait because they're too sick. Another thing that we've tried is, again, because of the problem of growing the cells, and even 10 days might sometimes be too long, and a patient, when they get really sick, they need T cells right away. And so what we've done is we've taken the T cells that we've grown up from healthy donors, and we've characterized, and that means we know what they recognize, what virus proteins they recognize, and what tissue antigens they recognize, and we can freeze them back in banks so that if you come to me and you say, my patient has got an EBV-associated lymphoma, have you got T cells? I can go to my bank and I can get a T cell that's hopefully tissue matched with your patient. And I'll take those T cells and you can thaw them and infuse them into your patient. And that strategy has been remarkably successful, much more successful than we ever thought. And that's produced complete remissions in over 50% of patients with cytomegalovirus, adenovirus infections, and EBV infections, and with partial tumor responses in over 70% of patients. So that's a good strategy that then gives you a time window where you might be able to generate specific T cells for that patient.
Dr. Cleo Rooney is professor of pediatrics, pathology, and immunology at Baylor College of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.